In this episode of Bengal Buzz, Ryan Sargent speaks with new ISU business consultant for workforce training and technology for the College of Continuing Education, Scott Stevens.
Good evening and welcome to Bengal Buzz. My name is Ryan Sargent, your host, and I'm excited for a very special guest that we've got tonight, Scott Stevens. Scott, thanks for being here.
Thank you. Thank you, Ryan. I'm glad to. It's good to be here. Talk to you about what's going on.
Yeah, so Scott's been a staple in the Pocatello and ISU community for quite a while. You're from Pocatello?
I am. I grew up here. You know, I have generations that grew up in Pocatello. My grandmother grew up in Pocatello, and then my mom grew up here in Alameda, and then I grew up here, me and my sister. And so I have left for a while. I haven't spent my entire life in Pocatello. I did move away I was in the service for a little bit in the Army, and then and then we lived in Virginia a little bit after getting out of the Army and stuff like that. So I have experienced other cities and lived in other cities, but you always come back here.
Yeah, you realized how great Pocatello is.
You know, you can't beat Pocatello in so many ways. Like, you know, my kids love it here. I love it here. You know, you wake up and, you know, you can get to work in 10 minutes.
That's the best part, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, just the other thing, like the people are nice. They give a darn about their neighbor. It's a fantastic place. We're so excited to be back. So, yeah.
Yeah. No, and you took the words right out of my mouth when I lived in Boise, which is a, you know, fine place to live and whatever. What I hated was that it took me 45 minutes to get to work and then 45 minutes to get home. I think every day, holy cow, I'm spending an hour and a half to get to work.
Yeah.
Now my commute's like 6 minutes. It's awesome.
I can ride my bike. I ride my bike to work, you know, during the summer times and when the weather isn't terrible and stuff like that. I ride my bike to work, and so it's fantastic. And I mean, the other thing is just the people in Pocatello. Like, people, they care about each other.
Yeah,
for the
salt
part.
Of the earth.
It really is, salt of the earth, good people. You know, like, our friends are here. Yeah, it's just, I don't know, it's just a great place.
Yeah. Yeah, so tell us a little bit about yourself. Are you a Highland Ram or a Pokey Indian?
So I am a Pokey Indian through and through. Like, again, my grandmother went to Pokey High, you know, and my mom went to Pokey High. My sister went to Pokey High. I went to Pokey High. I was, you know, little known fact is I was actually student body president of Pokey High in 95 to 96.
And, oh, very cool.
Yeah, and kind of funny side note to that is I introduced what we called it what did we call it? We called it a penny drive, where we went to we had the fifth hours compete against each other. It was our fundraiser, and who could collect the most pennies. And when we were doing it, our advisor, she thought I was nuts. She thought, oh, we'll collect $10, you know, or whatever.
It takes a lot of pennies to make a dollar.
It does. But we ended up like collecting like $500 of pennies during penny drive. And what was funny is, like, they're still using this as a fundraiser at Pokey High. They call it like the penny wars, I guess, now. Uh-huh. And last time I had heard it is, like, I think they made like $2,000. Like their major fundraiser.
Goes to what, like just students?
Students, they use it. Yeah, student events. They use it for student council activities. I think, like, when what we used ours for is we went out like during Christmas time and bought like dinners for, you know, needy families and stuff. And then our student council got together and put together the baskets. And yeah, just using that money for the good of the students and good of the community. But it was just fun. It was just kind of and we had a good group of, I mean, it wasn't just me. We had a really, really good group in our student council and stuff like that. Like, a lot of people that are just, you know, community minded, wanted to, you know, cared about other people.
I wonder how many of those high school kids were walking across the street to Wells Fargo, you know, saying, oh, can I exchange my $10 bill for...
We actually had that. I mean, I don't know, it was $10 bills, but like a dollar bill, right? You know, like, you know, hey, I get 100 pennies and throw this in and that'll put us over the top. And I don't know. Yeah, people kind of got the spirit of it too, you know. There was a competition and people wanted to win, but they kind of got the spirit of what we were doing, and they recognized that money was going to go back to either support them or support somebody who was going to need it.
Yeah, so, very cool.
It was cool. Yeah, very it was cool. Really cool.
And, you know, we were chatting yesterday when we were talking about the interview, and you mentioned something that I didn't know. Your dad used to own a pizza place?
Yeah.
In town? What was that?
So he grew up – so my dad didn't grow up here. He grew up in Twin Falls, but he came to Idaho State to go to – he came to Pocatello to go to Idaho State in the mid-60s.
You're a multi-generational Pokey Indian and Idaho State
And Idaho Bengal. State Bengal. Absolutely. Okay. My dad and mom met here at Idaho State. But my dad, he started – he was going to school. He kind of was trying to figure out his major. He went from, like, I think, chemistry to accounting to everything. You know, he was trying to figure out what he wanted to do. But in the meantime, he had to have a job, you know, kind of support himself. So he started working at this pizza shop. And this is, you know, this is back in the mid-60s, and the guy who owned the pizza shop liked to do some gambling, you know, or whatever. And and so he went down.
So he won the pizza shop at a bet.
He actually lost the pizza shop. My dad, the owner, lost the pizza shop down. I think he went down to Jackpot or Reno or something like that, and he got himself in a bind, and he had to sell his shop. And my dad was in a position where he's like, well, maybe I could buy it. So he bought this pizza shop from this guy, and it's called Bimbo's Pizza. And, like, still to this day, people will come up to my dad and be like, "What, Wally, that was such an awesome thing. Like, why, you need to bring it back. You know, you need to get into it." My dad's like, "Well, you know, I'm married, I have kids, you know." Now he's got grandkids and stuff. But yeah, people to this day, what he would do is it's Warren Miller. He was the ski, he would show Warren Miller, ski films, because, you know, it was before VCR and all that kind of stuff. I think it was like Friday night or maybe Saturday night, and he said it would just be a packed house. And there was a bar associated with the pizza shop, and so they served alcohol and stuff like that. Yeah. But people, I mean, still to this day, were like, that was one of the best places to go.
How long was Bimbo's Pizza around?
So I think Dad owned it for, like, I want to say 4 or 5 years, and, you know, he would tell me stories, like, he'd stay up in the, you know, up until, like, you know, like, they'd close at 2 o'clock, and then he'd stay up with his buddies a little bit longer, and they'd play foosball or pool or something like that. But then my sister came along, and my dad was like, well, I don't know if this is the best way to raise a kid.
Chose,
you know,
a family over Bimbo's
so
Pizza.
So he sold out, you know, he sold it, or he got out of the pizza and bar business, and, you know, he went to work for himself, and he ended up being, like, a contractor in town and stuff. And so he knows a ton of people in this town. Like, he, you know, through that and through being a contractor, he did a lot of, like, remodeling, and then
Very
he worked
cool.
for some people. And then he ended his career at Pocatello Neighborhood Housing Services as, like, he would build these smaller houses, or he'd be like the general builder for these smaller houses throughout the community. Yeah. And
so did he do those houses, the Aspen?
Yeah.
Aspen Place,
yeah,
or whatever it's called.
Yeah, that one right kind of behind.
In Alameda, you know, kind of behind Fred Meyer.
Yeah, he was, that was one of his projects. And
very cool.
Yeah, really cool. Yeah, I remember him building it. Like, I think I helped him with, you know, doing some of the, I was never very good at building or anything like that. I don't know if, Dad never expressed disappointment in me in that, but, like, it skipped over me, but I was a strong back and a weak mind when it came to construction. I knew how to move a shovel,
right?
Really well.
That's
so,
all you need when you're a contractor.
It was good stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Very cool. So I can kind of see where you get your entrepreneurial spirit and your community service, you know, dedication. Sounds like that's something your dad valued throughout his career as well.
Yeah, he did, very much so.
So we're here with Scott Stevens on Bengal Buzz. He's our guest tonight, and Scott's an Idaho State Bengal. So you've told us that you went to Pokey High, graduated from Pokey, a student by president. What brought you to ISU, or was ISU even your first stop? Were you in the military first, or?
No, so when I graduated Pokey High, I was fortunate enough because, like, I served in, you know, in student council. Like, I was given a scholarship to come here through the IFT Foundation.
Oh, yeah.
And
I think I have the same scholarship.
Did you get the same
IFT, IFT leadership scholarship?
Exactly, what
got me to ISU.
And it was, I mean, what a fantastic scholarship, and what great to the IFT family. Like, I'm really grateful to them. And so I had that scholarship, and I was going to come here for a year, and then I was going to serve a mission for my church for about a year, and then I planned to come back here. I planned to be an Idaho State Bengal. You know, I was kind of in our blood, and I liked coming to the football and basketball games and stuff like that. And we would come to the library. I was in some other classes that they encouraged us to come to this library and check things out and stuff. So yeah, I was. But it was kind of interesting. So I came for a year, and I wasn't ready for college. You know, I didn't really push myself.
That's not unique to you, I don't think.
Yeah, I was. And I mean, I remember I wanted to be an archaeologist because I watched Indiana Jones and stuff like that. But then I realized that that's not what it, you know, I thought it was an adventure, you know, and I burst my bubble or whatever. But I took a lot of classes. My advisor at the time, he was the dean, or excuse me, the chair of the biology department. And he's like, "Hey, Scott, here, I'll help you." And I forgot that he's a genius and completely, you know, one of the smartest men I know. And he put me in all these, like, tough classes, you know, my first semester. And I barely survived. And I got into my second semester, and it got a little bit better. But I left, and I went on a church mission. And then
Where'd you go? I went to Canada.
So for my mission, I went to Canada, Halifax, so in like Nova Scotia, New Brunswick, Newfoundland.
Yeah, very cool.
I grew up a little bit, you know, learned a little bit more about myself and kind of, I developed some study habits, you know, that I hadn't developed very well before. Yeah. And so I went, so when I got back, I was like, man, what am I going to do though? What am I going to study? That was the big question. I didn't really know. I thought archaeology really wasn't what I was really thinking it was. And I really liked dealing with people. So I went and I met with one of the counselors, and he's like, hey, you know, you should maybe look into sociology or something like that. That's a good thing. So I started looking into that and that's what I decided to do. I thought, I'm gonna major in sociology. This is fantastic. But then I also was like, what am I gonna do for a career though? Right. I mean, sociology,
that's the question every sociology major has to ask at some point, right?
I mean, what is my career gonna look like? You know, how am I gonna pay for myself? And so I was also in the National Guard. I joined the National Guard when I was in high school. They had this program where you could join as a junior in high school, and you'd go to basic training, and then you would get out, and you'd go back to what's called AIT, and then you'd be in the National Guard for, you know, up to 6 years. And so I joined the National Guard, and when I'd gotten back from my mission, the National Guard recognized that they didn't have enough officers to fill the billets that they had in this area, because there wasn't really a program to build officers. And so they started the ROTC back up here at Idaho State. I think they discontinued it in the late 70s or something like that. I think something like that, like 10, 15, maybe 20 years. And I have kind of an interesting story about that too. But like, so I got involved with the ROTC, and it was fantastic. It was a perfect fit for me. Being in the Army, having that purpose in life, almost all my best friends from college all came out of the ROTC. Uh-huh. There was a group of us.
We spent a lot of time together too. Those early morning workouts.
Yeah, we'd get up at 6 o'clock. Classes. I'm sorry to those people that lived up, by Bart's Field and stuff like that when we ran by. Maybe we shouldn't have chanted or yelled our cadences so loud or whatever, but it was awesome. Like it was a perfect fit, and we had a really good group of guys. Like it was kind of uncanny how good of, I mean, maybe I'm looking at it with biased eyes, but it was just almost uncanny of the group of guys that we had. I mean, all of us were in pretty good physical condition, you know, most of us were pretty smart, you know. But it was just a really good group. I mean, we had a guy, his name was Craig Broyles, and he actually played football for the university for his first 2 or 3 years, but he really wanted to be in the military, and he saw the opportunity, and he was just one of these fantastic leader kind of guys. He just wanted to be around. He always had, you know, always lifted people up, always had a good story to tell you, you know, sure. and so it was just a great fit. And then I went through sociology. I had some great professors. I had Cliff Bryan, who's passed away now, but Cliff was one of the great teachers at Idaho State University, in my opinion. He and Jim Aho were, in my opinion, some of the best teachers, you know. And granted, again, I'm looking at it with biased eyes, but I remember Cliff, like, I'm a little bit more to the right, you know, I'm military and stuff like that. And Cliff, you know, leaned more to the left or whatever. And I remember, one time I was walking down the hall with Cliff, and we were talking, and he'd just gotten a new textbook, and he was telling me, he's like, I really like this textbook. I feel like it really explains things right. Uh-huh. And I was like, well, you know, Cliff, I kind of feel like it kind of leans a little bit left. And Cliff's like, oh, really? I didn't get that from that, but that's cool. That's good feedback. I'll keep that in mind. You know, no kind of like, oh, you're an idiot for thinking that way or anything like that. Very much open-minded, very open to other people's ideas and opinions. And I just respected him so much.
Very cool.
And he was always, I mean, the cool thing about Cliff too is like, he would always tell funny jokes about how people kind of thought he was like a motorcycle rider or something like that. Or like, you know, they couldn't believe he was a, because I mean, if you looked at him, you wouldn't think college professor when you looked at Cliff. But he always just cared about other people and make sure that they were taken care of. And I just really enjoyed his classes.
That's the best part about going to school at Idaho State, I think, is that you have small class sizes and the ability to get to know your professors as an undergraduate and really know them, you know, not just in a formal way, but you're absolutely spot on.
Excuse me. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, you're absolutely, I mean, I had a teacher, I can't remember her name, an English teacher, but I learned how to write better in that class than I can't. I mean, yeah, I, you know, that carried me on even into my military career and stuff like that. Like I learned lessons about how to put things together. And I mean, she wasn't even a PhD or had a doctorate. She was, I think she was a master's student. I think she was going through, but she was a fantastic teacher. Yeah. And so. Absolutely.
Yeah, very cool. So we're here with Scott Stevens. Scott's told us a little bit about his time in Pocatello growing up and at ISU. You talked about being in sociology, wondering what it was that you were going to do for a profession, got involved with ROTC. Where did the military take you?
So so they gave you two options. You could stay in reserves or National Guard, or you could go active Army. And so I went active Army. I'd always wanted to be like an Army Ranger. You know, uh-huh. I wanted to go. When I was in high school, I saw these pictures of these guys in trees and, you know, had count. I was like, that's cool. You know what I mean? And not realizing the pain and agony they have to go through to get to that point. But I always wanted to do that. So I joined the Army. I said I wanted to go into active duty, and I graduated with pretty high up, not within like the class of like, you know, in sociology, but like in the ROTC, I had a pretty good record and stuff. So I got my first choice of where I wanted to go. So I chose the 82nd Airborne, and I chose infantry as my, uh-huh. as my branch. And part of that is you go to Fort Benning, North Carolina, and you go through what's called OBC, and then you go to Ranger School. And so I went through Ranger School. That was probably one of the more difficult few months of my life.
I can imagine that's rough.
Yeah, they you know you don't eat, you don't sleep, and you're judged by not only your the RIs or the Ranger instructors, but also by your peers, like of how well you perform. And uh-huh. and I didn't pass the first time going through the first. They break it into three segments, and the first segment I didn't pass. I had to what they call recycle. And so I went back but it was during what was called the Best Ranger competition. So there was like, usually it's like a 2 week gap and they start another course and you just get into that next course. Well, this one's like a 6 week gap. And we were like slave labor for the Army. Like I've cut grass with my e-tool, which is like a mini shovel. And I've pulled weeds. I painted enough yellow onto, you know, walls to fill a day, you know, I mean, it was funny is I was with a lot of good dudes and we had a good time doing it. You know, we made the best. It was kind of, I've never been to prison. I hope I never go, but it was maybe a little bit like that. And, but we made the best out of it. You know, we had fun, you know, at night when they let us, you know, relax a little bit, we played like Monopoly or something like that. But it was just, it was a good time. After Ranger School, I got out, I became a platoon leader in the 82nd Airborne and they gave me my own platoon. And we had a great, again, I was with, I don't know, I've always kind of been blessed to be with pretty good people, you know, uh-huh. I got a really good platoon. They're really disciplined. And we did really, really well. And then, but one day I'd been there about a year and we'd just done PT and I was walking back to go hit the showers and get my regular uniform on. And my company commander stopped me and said, "Hey Scott, do you want to go to Iraq?" And I said, "Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely I do. You know, I mean, that's why I joined the Army." Uh-huh. And I thought he was actually messing with me, you know, because like, you know.
Next thing you know, you're on a plane ride to Iraq.
Yeah, it's pretty much. Yeah, almost like that. Like, he's like, "No, I'm being not dead serious with you, Scott. We have this tasking come down and they need guys to go to Iraq and be trainers, to be military trainers for the Iraqis and help them learn how to, you know, be in a more disciplined Army." Because, I mean, we had just bowled over them, right? You know, in 2003 and even, you know, back in 1991, it really was no match for our military. And so we wanted to help them, you know, be able to create a force that could keep their democracy and, you know, keep them strong. And so I was like, "Yeah, absolutely. That sounds like a great opportunity." And so I had to like apply for it, so to speak, but I ended up getting it. And so about, yeah, like what you said, almost like I got it. And like, I was like, "Hey, you got to go on leave. Cause you've got to," this was like, I want to say this is like July 1st or something like that. And by July 5th, I was on leave heading home to be with my family before I was going to be heading overseas. You know, so it was kind of, you know, it was really quick turnaround. And so I put in all of that and I went through some training. I got put on a group with pretty good guys. We had some guys that were better than others. But we had a good group and we went up and we were on the northern border of Iraq and Syria. And that's where we started our mission, and our job was to train the border police to like to keep smuggling from happening and things, you uh-huh. know, people shouldn't be coming
in. How long were you deployed out there?
So I was deployed in Iraq for a full year. Up on that border, we were there for about 7 months. And literally, it was like this barren wasteland. It was kind of incredible. Like you could just see for miles, but it was kind of cool. Like I've hit golf balls into Syria, you know, like we brought our golf, you know, whack them into, and, And so, yeah, some Bedouin might pick that up. What's this? But like we, yeah, so it was, but it was fantastic. But that our project ended in like about with seven months. And so I had 5 months in country left that I could be there. And so they sent me on a team to Ramadi. And this is in 2006. And so Ramadi's in the news like every day, you know, this is the bleeding edge of the war. And, I get there and within like 2 days, like my area has been hit with a mortar. We've been hit with rockets. You know, my job is to kind of like gather intelligence and put things together. And I'm reading all of these casualty reports, both from Iraqi military as well as like, you know, American. And it got real in a real hurry.
Yeah.
But I got put on so I was there, and then my last month they put me on a team that actually went out and patrolled Ramadi. And that was, while it was scary, that was probably one of the coolest experiences of my life. Like, you just, you know, we go out there and you would patrol, you'd have like maybe 20 Iraqis that were with you and then 3 Americans, maybe 4. And we would go out and, I have to tell this one story. It was kind of funny. We went out in the we'd go out in the middle of the night and we would patrol the streets, and then, you know, we'd patrol, and then when we'd come in, we would, in order for us not to get, we'd come back into a base, and one of the ways we came in without being attacked by our own people is we would put what's called an IR chem light, which is like a chem light you can't see with a naked eye, but, you know, it's you can see it with infrared, and the guys on defense, they usually have night vision goggles, so they can see those type of things. So we went out there, but they're called chem lights, and they can look very like a regular chem light, which is just like a glow in the dark stick. Mm-hmm. And so we all put these in our pockets, and then we're coming in, we'd crack them and put them in our helmet, and that was the indicator that we were friendlies, and so don't shoot us up.
Yeah.
And but we'd had this Jundi that came, this Iraqi soldier, he had put one in his hat, and it was a regular glow stick. And so my friend, he grabbed it because we were like, when we could get shot up by other people too. And so he grabbed it and he was like, he put it in his cargo pocket, and he just lit him up like a Christmas tree. Right. And so he was kind of panicking because we're in hostile country, you know, we could get hit, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
So he grabs it out and I don't think he was thinking very clearly, but he stabs it with his knife. And thinking that I'll put a hole in this thing and I'll drain the juice out of it and everything. But instead he had pressure and it just squirted all over him. And so we're out there in the middle of in the streets, and we look at, he's just has all this like, you know, glowing in the dark, you know, he looks like a Christmas tree. And so, but this other guy thought really quickly and he grabbed one of these huge blankets, you know, like the blankets you used to see like on Yellowstone, you know, that I had like Dallas Cowboys on it. It's like this big
shamrock.
These are huge, huge, you know, like they're thick. And this is like August. It's like 100 and, you know, it's like 100 degrees out there. You know, it's night, but it's 100 degrees. So he throws it over the top of him. And so this dude had to walk in, and he kind of, you know, with this big heavy blanket with already all this equipment on, but we got in safe and we were good to hook. But it was a great experience.
That's gotta be scary though, right? I mean, real life there.
Yeah, you're dealing with life and death. And but like I said, I don't know why I was blessed. We just had good guys around us that, you know, worked well together and kind of kept each other and going in the right direction. Uh-huh. And so, yeah.
Yeah.
And then after that,
stay in the military.
Yeah,
after
I did.
Deployment?
Then I got back, and I was actually thinking about getting out. But then they said, "Hey, Scott, do you want to be a liaison officer to Pakistan?" And I said, "Absolutely, I do." and so I did. I went to Pakistan, and I was a liaison officer. And so my job was I would coordinate with the Pakistani army on what was going on in Afghanistan along the border there. And so I lived in Peshawar, which is kind of an interesting thing. Like Rahim Fahim, like in our community, he's from Peshawar.
Oh, really?
And so, yeah, we've actually talked a little bit about that, that I lived in his hometown or whatever.
So do we have a military base there, or
we have a consulate. We have a U.S. consulate.
Okay.
So I was based out of there. That's where my office was at. And I didn't wear military clothing. I wore clothing, you know, just like we wear here around town. You know, I had a collared shirt and khakis and stuff. And so I'd go to the Pakistani army, or I'd go to what's called the Frontier Corps, which is kind of like a pseudo military or paramilitary organization, and coordinate with them. But yeah, it'd be a lot of fun. Like I had a lot of fun doing that. Like I made really good relations with the Pakistanis. Like they would let me into things that maybe, my predecessors maybe wouldn't have got into or whatever. Uh-huh. And, yeah, they like sometimes the, the consulate general would call me up because there'd be a dignitary coming in that wanted, you know, because this is in the height of the global war on terror. And like they would call me up and say, hey, Scott, can you get us in to see the, you know, the commander of the Frontier Corps? And I'd be like, well, he usually likes, you know, a couple of weeks of advance notice. Like, oh, I know, but this guy's coming in. Is there any way? And so I would call up the my counterpart and I'd say, you know, and granted, you have to understand, I'm like 28, 29 years old. Like I'm not a very old person, you know. Uh-huh. And these guys are, you know, they're mid-40s, you know, early, late 30s, mid-40s. You know, they're considerably older than I am. And so I'm calling them up. And, like, you have to understand, like, the prestige of that, too. Like, you know, but I would call them, like, hey, you know, we got this guy coming in. And is that any, you know, but you know, I always like, hey, you know, this guy can really, you know, he's got connections in Washington, D.C. He can talk to the right people for you guys and kind of help you out. And they go, Steven, you're putting us in a bad position. You know, and I said, I know, but, hey, can you help us out? And they, you know. He'd say, okay, and then, you know, 15 minutes later, I get a phone call, like, hey, yeah, we're good. You can come by and visit us. And so it was awesome. I you know, for a young guy, you know, again, like, I wasn't even in my 30s yet. It was just, it was fantastic. I got a chance to meet the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Admiral Mullen.
So were you married at the time?
I wasn't.
Like, did your wife? Okay.
No. Yeah, that's another really good story.
I was
going to
say, would your wife, if you were married, gone with you
to
Pakistan?
I would always tell him, I was like, I wish my wife could come here. So I wasn't married until I got – So, and I don't know how much time we have, but like I have kind of an interesting story. Like I met my wife right before I went to Pakistan. I came home.
Actually, Scott, hold on. We're just about out of time.
Yeah.
But do you have time to keep talking?
Yeah, let's go.
We'll make this a two-part episode.
You
so for our listeners right now, tune in to Bengal Buzz to hear the rest of Scott Stevens and his story. he now works at Idaho State. We're going to get talking about some cool projects that he has going on here that's going to connect with the community. So tune in to Bengal Buzz next week, Monday night at 7 p.m. For the rest of Scott's story. But thanks for tuning in tonight, and we'll sign off from now. Give us your best Go Bengals, Scott.
Go Bengals!
Ryan Sargent with new ISU Business Consultant for Workforce Training and Technology, Scott Stevens. Part 2 in this two-part series can be heard next Monday night at 7 right here on FM 91.